think probably most of us have longtime friends, people perhaps that we have known from childhood, people that we have a lot of common experiences with, we got into trouble with as kids, or we did things together, maybe we fished together or did sports together. I have a friend who lives in Arizona, who I have known almost my entire life. We went to school together, the same schools. We ran cross country together. We wrestled together in high school. We went to the University of Illinois for a year together. And then we kind of went our separate ways. But to this day, he's special to me, because we just seemed to fit together well. Our personalities were such, if you can believe this, that we just meshed well. And he's a good friend of mine even today, although I rarely see him, haven't seen him in a number of years. And you probably have a friend like that also, maybe several. Who you feel a special affection for because of maybe the similarities in your personality or your interests, your experiences. I believe the Bible talks about two men, David and Jonathan, who had just that kind of friendship. And I believe they provide us with an example of the true strength that can adhere to the relationship between brethren. David and Saul, of course, forged a relationship in difficult circumstances. And it was a relationship that faced some difficult hurdles. And yet it stands out in biblical history as a shining beacon of what brotherly love can be like. I want to spend some time this morning just briefly tracing the development of the relationship between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. I want you to see the strength of that relationship. And then I want to point out some things at the very conclusion of our study that we can learn about brotherly love from the relationship between David and Jonathan. We are introduced to Jonathan, the eldest son of Saul, King Saul, in 1 Samuel, the 14th chapter. There's a story there that, if you'll pardon me, I'm not going to relate all the details, save to say that there was kind of a standoff between the Israelites and the Philistines. The Philistines really had the upper hand. And Jonathan and his armor bearer kind of got the ball rolling, and Jonathan just launched an attack against the Philistines, which turned into a rout of the entire Philistine army. And the picture we get of Jonathan in chapter 14 is that of a warrior, a man mighty in battle, fearless, courageous, a man who was of energetic action and capable of great loyalty and feeling. I think the story of Jonathan's exploits in chapter 14, although probably being told for a variety of reasons, I think they illustrate his courage and his faith. And his comment in the beginning of that chapter, verse 6, "For nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few," I think shows us that the foundation of his courage was found in his faith. We are introduced to David a little bit later on in the text. In chapter 15, Saul, the king, has disobeyed God and has been informed by the prophet Samuel that because of his disobedience, his kingdom is not going to last. That is, his dynasty is not going to continue. And Samuel is instructed to seek out a son in the house of Jesse, the Bethlehemite. And he goes, and in chapter 16, he anoints David as the successor to Saul. Something else happens at about the same time, apparently, and that is Saul seemed to be prone to either depression or some sort of mental illness of some sort, and music relaxed him. He sent out his servants to find someone who could play music that would soothe him. And as it would happen, David was recommended to King Saul by one of his servants as a skilled musician. And he ends up coming into the court of Saul and becomes probably only one of several armor bearers for the king. And there's an interesting statement in 1 Samuel 16 and verse 21. I want to bring it out because it stands as such a great contrast to what's going to occur later on. And that is that Saul loved David greatly. In the beginning, their relationship was a very good relationship. In chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, there is the story there of David's victory over Goliath. And I'm not going to go through the story or to talk about any of the other aspects of it except to make this one point. Chapter 14 and chapter 17 are two chapters that relate for us the courage and the faith of these two men, Jonathan and David. And it is immediately after chapter 17, in the beginning of chapter 18, that we first learn about the beginning of this relationship between David and Jonathan, that will be a relationship as close as two brothers in the flesh could possibly have, maybe even closer if you have a brother and don't get along. It's a story in 1 Samuel 17 of courage and faith. And so it's not surprising that Jonathan would feel himself drawn to David, that they would be, as the text says, two souls knit together. They were alike in many ways. Brotherly love is a love that stems from relationship. We'll talk a little bit more about it next Sunday morning as we talk about family love. But it is a love, an affection that has a commonality to it. And Jonathan and David are both warriors, both men filled with faith, and which faith then grants them courage. Jonathan gave gifts to David. Did you notice the value of those gifts? I'm not of the opinion that this was the only robe that Jonathan had. If you're the king's son, you probably got more than one robe. But when you give away your armor, especially in a time when armor and other weapons were scarce among the Israelites, the Philistines had monopolized metalworking or metallurgy skills. And so weapons were not very common among the Israelites. Jonathan and Saul and probably a select few had weapons. And Jonathan gives his armor and his belt and his sword to David. Those were the kinds of things that became individualized to each warrior. And yet such is the love for Jonathan for this courageous individual David that he wants to give these things to him. I don't know if the robe he gave was a royal robe or not. But this was a valuable gift or valuable gifts that Jonathan bestows upon David. And like I said, although David and Jonathan weren't technically brothers, their relationship was as close as that of brothers. In fact, it's emphasized again and again in Scripture. Did you notice that in the four verses that our brother John read prior to our study, that it is stated twice that Jonathan loved David as his own soul? In chapter 19, in verse 1, Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David, but Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. We'll talk a little bit more about the tension that arises in the relationship between David and Jonathan because of Saul's jealousy. In chapter 20 and verse 17, the text says, "Now Jonathan again caused David to vow, because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul." Are you getting the picture that these are two lions who think alike, who are both courageous, and who have this tremendous affection and respect for one another? But there are some hurdles in this relationship. I'm going to pass that scripture. And those hurdles have to do primarily with Saul, Jonathan's father. Of course, in the beginning, as chapter 16, verse 21 suggested, Saul loved David. David was a courageous individual, and David was a player of music that soothed Saul. But very quickly, Saul begins to be motivated by jealousy and then even fear with respect to David. When David comes in with the rest of the army in chapter 18 and verse 9, the women of Israel are praising David more than they're praising Saul, and that bothers Saul. He begins to watch David with a little different eye. A little later on in the chapter, in chapter 18 of 1 Samuel, verses 12 and 15, we find that the text says Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was obviously with David, and David behaved himself wisely in all of the tasks, the responsibilities that Saul was giving him as he was part of Saul's army, part of Saul's leadership. And so Saul, motivated by his jealousy and his fear, attempted to kill David on numerous occasions. On more than one occasion, at least twice, he tried to pin David to the wall with a spear. I believe that would have ended my willingness to go and play music. You know, if you're not going to throw money, don't throw spears. But Saul tries to kill David on at least two occasions. When David finds out that Saul was willing to give him his daughter Michal, Saul arranges for David to pay a dowry that involved fighting against and taking the lives of 100 Philistines. Saul really is not hoping that David is going to marry his daughter. He wants David to be killed by the Philistines. And so he unnecessarily exposes David to danger. And yet David, because the Lord's with him, he kills 200 Philistines. He meets the challenge. Saul sends assassins to the house of David, and Saul's daughter, Michal, now married to David, assists David in escaping. And as we read in chapter 19 and verse 1, Saul commanded Jonathan and all of his servants to kill David. The word is out, the order is out. David is to be killed. And sadly enough, when Saul realizes that Jonathan is actually protecting and defending David, he tries to kill his own son, Jonathan. I'm not sure Saul was entirely mentally right here, but if you look in chapter 20 and in verse 32, when Saul has ordered the death of David, Jonathan asks the question, why should he be killed? Verse 32, what has he done? Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him, that is Jonathan, just like he had David, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. Saul is so angry, so hostile to David, that he's willing even to, at least at the moment, kill his son Jonathan. Using very strong language, Saul warns Jonathan that David is a competitor. Let's read a little bit further, a little bit earlier, I should say. Jonathan is explaining why David hasn't appeared at a regular eating occasion with the king. And Saul realizes that this is subterfuge. In verse 30, his anger is aroused against Jonathan. He said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Now therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." Saul says, as long as David lives, you're not going to be the next king. Saul understood that David was a competitor, but guess what? So did Jonathan. Jonathan was already aware of that in chapter 20, verses 14 through 16. I'll not read all of these. But Jonathan makes comments to David in their conversations that imply Jonathan understands that in the future, David's going to be in a position where if he wants to, he can have a coup, a purge of, I should say, not a coup, but a purge of Jonathan's house. That wasn't unknown in those days. It was a fairly common practice for one king, if there was a change of dynasties, for the new dynasty to wipe out all of the descendants of the other dynasty. Those are your competitors. And Jonathan says to David, when you come into power, I'm paraphrasing here, the thought of the passage, I want you to be kind to my house. Don't do that. And so Jonathan understood it also that David would be the next king. And what I want you to see here is that Jonathan's caught in the middle between David and Saul. We've been talking about what Saul's doing, but understand, Jonathan and David, they have this close relationship. But Saul is Jonathan's father. He's the king, and Jonathan's going to be the next king as far as Saul is concerned. But Jonathan also is this soul knit together with David's soul, and he wants to preserve that friendship. So Jonathan is caught in the middle of the tension, the political tensions between Saul and David. Well, I want you to see some things in principally Jonathan's behavior that illustrate how love behaves, particularly brotherly love, as it behaves. When we talk about love, and we'll say more about this next Sunday morning, when we talk about love, we need to be careful. We don't make a distinction between how brotherly love acts and how what we sometimes call agape love acts. I understand that the word that is translated love in 1 Corinthians 13 is the word agape. But let me just make this observation. I'll let you chew on this and we'll talk more about it next Sunday. 1 Corinthians 13 is sandwiched between chapter 12 and chapter 14. Someone says, now there's a real Bible student. He's figured out that 13 comes between 12 and 14. But what's going on in those other two chapters? Well, what Paul's dealing with is a lack of love between brethren, the brethren at Corinth, particularly in those chapters with respect to the exercise of miraculous spiritual gifts. Isn't it interesting then that when he wants to talk about how love behaves in the context of brothers treating other brothers properly, he talks about agape love. We'll say more about that next week, but look at the way love behaves. Love is long-suffering, suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now, there are a number of relationships in which love ought to characterize our relationship, but I would suggest to you that this love should characterize our relationship with our brethren no less than it would with our spouses. It's the same love. The source of motivation may be different, but it behaves the same way. And I want to show you that in the life of Jonathan and David, brotherly love acted like this. I'm not going to go through all of these things. We might not even be able to show all of them. But one of the points I would make is that brothers don't envy. They don't seek their own. Brotherly love will prevent that. Unlike his father, Jonathan was not envious of the praise that David received. Has it occurred to you that as David is being praised and as honors are being heaped upon him, that that might rankle a little bit with the guy who was the king's son, the guy who's supposed to be the next in line? Jonathan may not have understood in chapter 16 at the conclusion of Goliath's death, he may not have understood that David was to be the next king. But it doesn't seem to make any difference. Jonathan's not all tied up in all of that. He's not selfish and jealous and envious like his father is of the praise that's being given to David. In fact, Jonathan on more than one occasion risked his own safety to defend David before his father. Why, Saul is so angry that Jonathan would defend David that he even tries to kill him on one occasion, as we pointed out earlier. Jonathan was angry in chapter 20, verses 32 through 34, angry that his father Saul would treat David that way. Think about that. Think about the man who could be king, who is defending the one who would take his place, who is angry and grieved because his father is not treating David justly. What evil has he done that he should die? I wonder how many men in Jonathan's position would have said, that's right, Dad, and he ought to die too, because he's the one that stands between me and the throne. Not Jonathan. There's no sign at all in Jonathan's conduct, what we know of it, of selfishness or envy or jealousy toward David. And so I would point out, first of all, that as you look at this relationship, that brothers don't envy. They don't seek their own. That wasn't true of Saul, but it was true of Jonathan. Brothers protect and encourage one another. Jonathan protected David from his father Saul on more than one occasion. In chapter 19 and verse 2, Saul has given the order to all the servants. David is to be killed. But Jonathan tells David, warns him, saying, "My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide." And they make arrangements so that Jonathan can inform David of when it's safe for him to come out of hiding. But Jonathan protects his brother David, that is, brother by affection. But there's an interesting passage that I sometimes think we maybe overlook. Later on in David's life, when David can no longer stay in Jerusalem, the pursuit of Saul is too hot, the desire is too keen to kill David, that David has to flee to the south and he's living in the wilderness there. Turn, if you will, to chapter 23 of 1 Samuel. And I want to read a couple of verses here. Beginning in verse 14, let's just start there, pick up a little bit of context. "And David stayed in strongholds in the wilderness and remained in the mountains in the wilderness of Ziph. Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand." Now, you know, you can read over that very quickly. Saul sought him every day. But can you imagine if your life was constantly one of having to be a fugitive? Here's somebody who wants to kill you, and he's got the army behind him, the army of Israel. You've got your men, but you're hiding in caves and in wildernesses and strongholds and around the other side of the mountain from Saul, as he did on one occasion. "Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God." Boy, that just says volumes, doesn't it? "Strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, 'Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father knows that.' So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his own house." Do you realize the risk that Jonathan took here? Going into the wilderness and meeting with this outlaw of Israel, the one that his father is seeking, but he goes down there to encourage David, to strengthen his hand in the Lord. I wonder what that expression means. I wonder what it's trying to say is that Jonathan got with David and said, "Listen, what you're doing is right. You're righteous. My father's wrong. I want you to continue doing what's right." That would be strengthening his hand in the Lord. Or maybe Jonathan said to David, "Listen, my father doesn't admit this, but the Lord anointed you, and you're going to be the next king because that's the Lord's will." He strengthened his hand in God. I'm not sure. But I'll tell you what. Brothers protect and they encourage one another. Even as Jonathan did David, for David here while David was running from Saul in the wilderness. Too many times in congregations, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on application this morning, but I think you can see these points. But I want to make this observation. Too many times in congregations, just a little bit of juicy information about a brother is like throwing meat into a tank of piranhas. They're just a feeding frenzy where people are just, they can't get to tell somebody else fast enough. And instead of protecting brethren, they savage them. Their reputations, their characters, as they're considered by others. We need to be protecting. And I'm not saying that we ought to condone or ignore sin. That's not the context here, is it, at all? But there'll be times when brethren are going to be attacked, brethren who have done nothing wrong. In fact, in some cases, they'll be attacked because they've done the right thing. There's an expression that Rush Limbaugh uses every once in a while. He uses it in kind of a derisive way. He talks about the mainstream media and some politicians circling the wagons around some of their companions to protect them lest any of their evil doing be brought out into the open. And of course, he's suggesting that shouldn't happen. But what I'm saying is there's a time when we need to circle the wagons. There are times when we need to protect one another. I won't listen to it. I won't stand for you to tear down my brother. I think that's the attitude that Jonathan had. Now, obviously, he's dealing with a situation that was both political and civil and religious. But he's protecting and encouraging his brother David. Here's another thing that I think is interesting, just looking at this relationship kind of as a whole. Brothers refuse to let difficulties pull them apart. Well, you talk about a relationship that was ill-fated. You know, here's the two guys who can be the next king of Israel, one the son of the present king and one who's been anointed as a competitor. You talk about two guys who shouldn't have had a relationship, but here's a relationship that went through all of those difficulties. Even assassination plots by Saul, Jonathan's father. They just refuse to let difficulties pull them apart. Look at chapter 20, if you would, and let's read some verses here. This is Jonathan talking to David. And he says in verse 14, "And you shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "Let the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies." Now Jonathan again caused David to vow because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Jonathan says, nothing's going to separate us. Nothing's going to pull us apart. Not even when you come to the throne, which Jonathan clearly expected would happen. Even under those circumstances, you're going to show kindness to my house. They just refuse to let difficulties pull them apart. In the same chapter, in chapter 20, verse 42, Jonathan has had to warn David that it's not safe for him to stay in Jerusalem. He's got to flee. In verse 42, as they're parting, verse 41 talks about their greeting and being affectionate. And verse 42 says, "Go in peace," Jonathan says to David, "since we have both sworn in the name of the Lord, saying, 'May the Lord be between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" So he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. The Lord is between you and me. What do you think that means? What's the significance of saying the Lord's between you and me and between my descendants and your descendants? It means the Lord is a witness that we're going to do the right thing toward each other. Even in situations where, in many secular situations, people would have been massacring each other, eliminating all of their political opponents. Jonathan and David said, not us. Not us. Because brothers refuse to let difficulties pull them apart. And I want to back up a verse here to verse 41. After the lad who was part of Jonathan's sign to David that it wasn't safe, after he's been sent back to the city, David arose from a place toward the south where he'd been hiding, fell on his face to the ground and bowed down three times. And they kissed one another, and they wept together, but David more so. Now, I have read the comments, the snarky comments about skeptics who, well, this is homosexual love, David and Jonathan, you know, there's a passion there that's impure. That's not at all what's going on here. What you've got are two individuals who care very deeply about each other, who have a great affection and respect for one another, and they're not afraid to show it. They're getting ready to leave one another. Jonathan doesn't know what's going to happen to David, and they weep. I find it interesting. It says, and David more so even than Jonathan, the tenderness of David's heart toward his friend. Jonathan on another occasion was grieved on behalf of David because of the way his father was treating him. He was angry. He got up from the table and wouldn't even eat because of the shameful way that Saul was treating his brother David. As I said, there's no indication in the text that there was anything impure about their love for one another, but it was a strong love. You may recall the death of Jonathan. Saul and his sons are all killed, with the exception of Ishbosheth, in north Israel there at the hands of the Philistines. That's recorded in chapter 31 of 1 Samuel, the very end of that book. And David gets the news of the death of King Saul and of his beloved Jonathan down in the south, where he has had to hide and be separate. And David lamented in the latter part of that chapter, beginning in verse 17, over not just the death of Jonathan, but also the death of Saul. Saul was the Lord's anointed. And there's some interesting things said here. Let's begin reading in verse 23. He says, Saul and Jonathan, this is 2 Samuel 1, verse 23. Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their deaths, and in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with luxury, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan was slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You've been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women. David says there was an affection between these two men that was stronger than the bonds of sexual love. He's not saying it's sexual love. He's saying that it was an affection that was even stronger than that physical tie. These were two souls who were knit together because of their common faith in God, their courage, their outlook in life, their characters. Brothers are not afraid to show their affection for one another. David sang this song talking about his affection for his brother Jonathan. We live in a culture where men in particular are encouraged not to show their feelings, their emotions. I believe that's probably more true of my generation than it is, say, for instance, the next three generations. I'm not that old. I think that's changing as our culture has changed some. But it is still viewed by some as a lack of masculinity for a male to express his affection, particularly for another male. And it is unfortunate that because of the perversions that are in our society, sexually speaking, that men have to be uncomfortable about expressing their love, their affection for another man, lest they be thought to be impure in their passions, in their affection. Isn't that a shame? In this relationship, you got two brothers who are not afraid to open their hearts to one another, to let each other know their feelings, that they have this strong love, this strong affection. There's nothing wrong with that. Please do not let the abuse of legitimate things drive you away from what's legitimate. I think sometimes we do that. Well, let me conclude this morning. I appreciate your patience in listening, and I'm just going to draw a couple conclusions. Most of you are aware that Debbie and I have two sons. Our sons are named David and Jonathan. I've told you many times that when they were young, when they'd get to fussing and carrying on, we'd remind them of their namesakes. David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. And we'd tell them that these were two men who were just very good friends and they got along, and you will too, or we'll bang your heads together. And by and large, they did. They got along well. I don't know if they learned that much from the example of David and Jonathan, this particular relationship. I suspect probably some. But I know we can learn something about it. We can learn something about brotherly love and the way that we ought to behave toward those who are our spiritual brethren. And the other point I would like for you to take away from this, and that is brotherly love, as demonstrated in the case of David and Jonathan, can withstand great challenges. We let the littlest things separate us sometimes. We're jealous over small things. We're envious of one another over things of almost no consequence whatsoever. We almost look for slights sometimes. I think we need to be careful about those kinds of things. We need to understand that our love, our affection for one another, because we are brethren in Christ, needs to overcome those things. We need to stop being suspicious of things. It's easy to fall into that. But I think David and Jonathan remind us of how strong brotherly love can be. I guess my question to you this morning is, are you a part of God's spiritual family? Have you obeyed the gospel and been baptized into Christ? Have you been born again, as Jesus talks about, of water and of the Spirit? Born into the spiritual family of God. So that you can know that blessing, and it is a tremendous blessing to have spiritual brethren. People who would protect you and encourage you, even give their lives for you in cases where that might be necessary. Brethren sometimes do that. Wouldn't you like to be a part of that family? All of us imitating our Father, His love, and that of our elder brother, Jesus the Christ. If you've not obeyed the gospel this morning, we want to encourage you to become a Christian, become a son of God. I've used the word brethren in the masculine sense, but I'm talking to men and women who need to become a part of that spiritual family. And if that's what you need this morning, why would you wait? Why not become a part of God's spiritual family? We invite you as we stand and sing.